Welcome to The Technology Pill, a podcast that looks at how technology is reshaping our lives every day and exploring the different ways that governments and companies use tech to increase their power. My name is Gus Hossain, and I'm the Executive Director at Privacy International.
And I'm Caitlin, and I'm PI's Senior Campaigns Officer. Hi.
Today, we're talking about good news. So the context to this is that a few weeks ago, I was in Stockholm meeting with some of the organizations we work with there. And they noted that things have gotten so bad in the world that they have to start their weekly staff meetings by forcing people to report some form of good news in the world. It's almost like they have to dig so deep to actually make it a line item at a meeting that's thou shall report on something good. And that was slightly beautiful, but very disheartening. And I do worry that for people who navigate the world of human rights, of abuses of power, of the power of technology in the wrong hands, I do worry that we dwell and we're like pigs in when it comes to talking about dark things and not being able to see the bright things. And I don't know how you feel about this, Caitlin, but like I have a kid and I have to deal with his despondency about the future because he keeps on hearing about how the future is so horrible. And I worry that if we keep on believing this stuff, whether it becomes self-fulfilling prophecy or it almost doesn't matter, we are not going to be okay as humans if we keep on doing this.
No, I don't have a kid. So all the misery is my own. I'm not responsible for anyone else's. But yeah, I think there's a knife edge between understanding enough about what's bad to do something about it and understanding too much about what's bad and being overwhelmed by it and not doing anything. There's a sweet spot where you feel the need to do things, but those things are specific and useful, not, oh my God, everything is so bad all the time and nothing gets better, overwhelmed, stuck in a rut, can't really do anything.
Yeah. And look, we're our own worst enemies. Like, we are practically the industry that dwells on bad news. You know, when we talk to media, we have to talk about bad news. When we talk to, you know, the powerful institutions around us and we try to hold them to account, we aren't telling them all the great things in the world. We're saying how things are bad and things have to get better. But I want this edition for us to actually talk about some of the things in 2023 that did go well. The things that there are moments that we forget that there's huge progress being made, even though we did have to search a little hard to find some of these stories. So what we did is that we did an internal survey at PI of our colleagues and asked them for some examples of things that went well in 2023. And we've put them into categories, and we thought we would go through some of them with all of you today. But if I could just take a second to put some context around this and the reason why we are optimists in a field and an industry that relies on dystopia. We literally have as a guiding principle 1984, which is like one of the first dystopic novels there was. But we've both been in this field for a while now, and we can say hand on heart, this field of technology, rights, privacy, surveillance, whatever you want to call it, is in such better shape than it was just a few years ago. Like next week, Caitlin is going to be in Brazil. And it's not just because it's a beautiful country. Why are you going to Brazil?
Well, a mix of reasons, but the biggest is we're hoping to bring together a ton of different organizations who work in, you know, fairly different fields that a good 10, 15 years ago wouldn't have crossed over at all. So education organizations and children's rights organizations and tech digital rights organizations to talk about facial recognition in schools in Brazil and what we can do about it, because we think that there are a lot of things that we could do about it. We think it's a really good moment and there are really good opportunities for stopping the rollout of a technology that we think is incredibly inappropriate for a context in which almost everyone is vulnerable. So yeah, that's the main reason. Also, we have partners in Brazil and we have a conference to go to and we have people to see and friends to meet, you know, professionally. Yeah, there are lots of reasons we're going to Brazil. It's very exciting.
And yet 15 years ago, it was unimaginable that we would be in Brazil, working with local partners. And today you're working with partners who aren't just privacy organizations, as you described. And so like people want to talk about these issues. They want to get into these issues and they ultimately believe something can happen. You could even hold an organization like Google to account, where 15 years ago, if we tried to hold Google to account on something, not only would we be laughed at, but we would actually get hate mail, you know, people getting angry at us for being mean to Google. The world has changed so much. And as we'll discuss, it's not just that the mood has changed, but the ability to hold these actors to account has changed dramatically, which is beautiful.
It's crazy that 15 years ago, Google wasn't brand new. Time is moving much faster than I think it should.
Yeah, I know. But just replace Google with OpenAI. Like if you talk shit about OpenAI right now, people will like come yelling at you across the street. They'll cross the street and tell you why OpenAI is a solution to the future. That's what Google was 15 years ago.
Wow. When was 15 years ago? This is a level of 2007?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. So that was when Google was doing Street View. Gmail was being read by Google so that they could give you advertisements. And it was right before Google had to take the brave move of pulling out of China because they found that the Chinese government was hacking into their systems.
I was 13 years old.
Oh, shut up.
I was 14 years old. I was a teenager.
That does not make it better that you still can't do arithmetic. But
oh, God. Anyway, sorry, it took us down in a rabbit hole. Yeah.
Okay, so let's start where we were, which is the idea of companies getting disciplined. It was hard to imagine a day when a regulator somewhere in the world would hold a company to account on the basis of a complaint. And yet now, as we go through the news, practically every day, we see story after story about some regulator on the basis of some relatively new legal innovation is holding a company to account. One of the first ones that got nominated to us was a story from, I believe it was in May of this year, when the Federal Trade Commission in the U.S. held a period tracking company app, called Premom. Is it Premom? No, I misspelled that. Prenom. Oh, that would have been a horrible name for an app.
No, that is the name. Jesus, is that the name?
Jesus.
In the FTC article, it's Premom. Premom. How do you say it? Premom.
What a
Which is a horrific name. Well, it's ovulation tracking. Okay. It's ovulation tracking for people who want to get pregnant rather than period tracking for people who just want to know when to, you know, batten down the hatches. Christ. It's not the end of the day on a Friday, which is what it feels like.
So, Premom, this app, which is free to download and has, or had, at least at the time, hundreds of thousands of users that helped the users track ovulation, periods, and other health information. They were actually leaking data through their SDKs to various third parties across the world. And the FTC noted that it included China. So third-party organizations in China. And the FTC was not terribly happy about this, which was nice to see. It's good to see a regulator as huge and powerful as the FTC essentially looking into the details of an app to the level that we do. We did this kind of work in 2019, looking at various apps to see where they were leaking data to and trying to hold them to account. But the FTC did this and issued a monetary penalty of $100,000, which, you know, for a lot of companies, that doesn't really count too much. But what it did also include is that it said to the company, it has to stop doing this. It has to take commitments to stop doing this. It has to make sure that people are informed that this happened and are given meaningful controls going forward.
Yeah, they banned them from disclosing any more data for advertising. Like they banned them, which is extremely interesting. And it's much more valuable in a lot of ways than a monetary penalty, because if that's their business model,
exactly,
goodbye unless they sort their business model, which is a really, really nice and very potentially useful remedy as compared to, monetary fine, which, you know, if you make enough money, it's a cost of doing business rather than deterrent.
Exactly. And that just to very clearly articulate what this company was doing. It was leaking social media account information, precise geolocation information, as well as information about the device you were using and all the networks that you may be connecting to. So all of this going to third parties, all when you as a user would have no idea about it. So yeah, good on the FTC for stepping up. And as we jump to the next story, this one is a wonderful one because it's the Norwegian data protection regulator who got so annoyed at Facebook that they fined them $98,500 a day from August 14th to November of this year until Facebook or Meta fixed their behavioral advertising model, essentially saying, hey, 82% of the Norwegian population have Facebook accounts. Apparently 65% are on Instagram. And that Facebook's business model is illegal in Norway. And Facebook has to change.
Wow. And they're going to fine them every day until they do.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's crazy, but it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was interesting to see is that in November, it was made permanent and extended to all of the EU and the European Economic Area. So if you think about it, that now affects 250 million active users across Facebook and Instagram.
Wow.
It kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, it's nice to have a ruling by the EDPB, which is the European collective of all the data protection authorities. It says this is how you should be applying data protection law because it's kind of set by the GDPR, which is European legislation. So in theory, all the other data protection authorities should shuffle into line.
That absolutely
is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you take the next one?
Okay. So the CNIL, which is France's data protection authority, fined Criteo. Finally. So Criteo is an ad tech company. It's a data broker that we have been chasing around for a really, really long time. I think we filed a complaint in 2018, so 5 years ago. And, you know, we said, this is unacceptable. The business model is unacceptable. It's completely inappropriate. And yeah, so the CNIL agreed with this and levied close to the maximum fine, which was 60 million euros, but it got reduced to 40 million. It got reduced to 40 million after a hearing at CNIL's offices in March, during which Criteo pleaded for a reduced fine in light of its only 10 million euros profit in 2022, which is great. It means the fine is now double what they made in 2022. And it means business isn't doing very well, which is great.
Exactly.
The most important kind of thing that CNIL found or said was Criteo was unable, they didn't have the ability to ensure consent tracking was collected from the users of its 40,000 partners prior to collecting, sharing, and processing the personal data for advertising purposes. So basically, they had all this data and they had absolutely no idea if it was legal for it to have been collected and passed on to them, which meant when they sold it on and reused it for advertising and targeting, they didn't know at all if it was legal or not. So thank God for them finally, 5 years down the line, getting smacked about a bit. Yeah. And then while we're on the CNIL, good CNIL news. I don't know how you pronounce it. It's C-N-I-L, but I go with CNIL.
I'll go with CNIL too.
Yeah. They also find Doctissimo. So this is another one of our complaints that, again, we submitted ages and ages and ages ago. Doctissimo is a French website which mostly offers, you know, articles, tests, quizzes, discussion forums, importantly, like all relating to health and well-being. And the CNIL noted, you know, several infringements, in particular, how long they were retaining data, the way that they were collecting health data. So people were doing these online quizzes. It comes from our mental health research work, like these mental health websites, and people were taking these quizzes to try and work out, you know, am I potentially clinically depressed? Should I be talking to someone? And that information was being collected and shared in ways that were deeply inappropriate. So the CNIL noted that. They noted the security of the data, as well as the way cookies were being deposited on the terminals of the users. And they got a €380,000 fine, I think.
Yeah.
So it's just nice to win one. You know, you submit a complaint, yes. You chase it around for years.
Years.
And then you win. And that's nice.
Yeah. So while 380,000 isn't much, arguably 40 million euros isn't much either. When you look at, that was actually a case that I'll admit I didn't look at in great detail, but it was the Irish regulator who fined TikTok 345 million euros over their processing of children's data. The fact that I didn't really pay attention to that story is a little embarrassing. I really have to get to the bottom of that one, and maybe we can come back later with more details on how TikTok is responding to the fact that it was collecting children's data and using that data for advertising, which was clearly, yes, expensive in the end for them.
But I think it's always worth remembering scale, right? Because if the Criteo fine got reduced to 40 million euros, but it's also, that's their profit for 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, TikTok got fined a whole lot more, but their profits are also quite significantly more. But yeah, but it is nice that Criteo is not doing very well.
And so the final example of a company being held to account is the current global darling, Sam Altman's other pet project, which is WorldCoin. Now, WorldCoin is this idea that if only everybody could be issued a single identity based on their iris and given money for doing so, then we might very well create a new way of running the global economy. And so this is a company that has essentially gone around the world with these very strange spheres that they put into public spaces and ask people to come and have their eyeballs scanned, and they pay them money in exchange.
Ooh.
And
do they pay them money? Because I thought they paid them dubious cryptocurrency. Did they not pay them in WorldCoin?
That's right. Yes.
Which.
Yeah. Yeah. But thou shalt not speak poorly of Sam Altman, because he's now God who has returned. You know, again, I don't want somebody crossing the street and trying to punch me. But what's interesting is that the Kenyan regulator, who just a few years ago didn't exist, the Kenyan regulator stopped this from happening in Kenya, saying that this is unacceptable behavior to treat Kenyan citizens in this way. And as a result, yeah, they can't do any more work in Kenya until the regulator lets them, which is just beautiful. The government was annoyed by it. The regulator was annoyed by it. And you have to remember, like, that level of money given to people, even though it's not real money, in a lot of these places, in a lot of these contexts, is a lot of money. But it was very nice to see a regulator get in the way of these grand ambitions.
That was so weird. That was some real sci-fi creepy bullshit.
Yeah. And we're giving these people, I think there's $100 million invested in WorldCoin. Like, it's ridiculous money. Ridiculous money. It's almost as much money as TikTok got fined by the Irish regulator. But it's also like 80,000 times the amount of money that exists in the entire defense of human rights globally. So it's quite extraordinary. So now, shifting to our second domain of hope, is that governments, at the softest, they were held to account, but at the strongest, they actually abandoned their dumb ideas. And we'll start with the first one, being still in Kenya. And actually, you worked on this a little bit, didn't you?
Yes. Caitlin? Yeah, no, I did work on this. Oh, you want me to explain what it is? Okay. So there's this kind of ID system that's been working its way through the Kenyan government for a long time. Like, I think it already had begun this process when I started at PI, which is now almost 5 years ago. And yeah, it's like one of the first projects I was working on. It was called Huduma Number. And the idea was it would be this kind of brand new, shiny digital ID system, but it was hugely problematic. It had all sorts of really huge issues and huge concerns with it. You know, if you want, we've got these really cool videos with people who were double registered, which is its own kind of thing in Kenya, that the Huduma number was going to completely screw over even more than they were already getting screwed by the ID system in Kenya. But anyway, so it was this crazy, really inappropriate ID system. It's been dropped. So it's not going to happen. Finally, some sense has emerged and they've dropped this ID system.
Yeah, and we're very grateful because one of our partner organizations called Hacking Sharia, who have been on a podcast about 2 years ago, they led litigation against this system, not because the surveillance was pervasive, but rather because of this double registration problem, that the system was almost designed to exclude vast amounts of the Kenyan population. Mm-hmm. And it was the government deciding that there are some people in Kenya who didn't belong there and didn't deserve to be counted and didn't deserve access to services, and they were going to use this system to stop them. Now, let's not get overly excited, because the Kenyan government, as much as they don't like WorldCoin type ID systems, they do love ID systems, and they're mm-hmm. going to come back with another one at some point. And actually, I think they already have proposed a new one. So it's going to be another uphill battle, but it is ultimately winnable.
Yeah. And the list of problems was so long. It's like it was wildly insecure, and they kept insisting, no, it's definitely secure. And, you know, I think in the court case, people were saying, okay, but like, can you prove it? And they said, well, you just have to trust us. It's definitely secure. It's unhackable, which, if you know, is definitely untrue. And then not only was it wildly insecure, it was definitely going to discriminate against particular people, because part of the way that you got your Huduma number was based on your existing citizenship documentation, of which there are huge problems in Kenya. So like whole groups of people, whole scale, it was just going to exclude. It was biometric, which has its own, you know, huge and significant issues that are very visible in systems like Aadhaar in India. It was just this really long list of endless reasons why it was a really, really bad idea, you know. And so it's a real relief that they've kind of given up.
Yeah. So then we're going to bring the next two examples of good news closer to home, to us in the United Kingdom. And as listeners of this podcast will know, that if there's one government department globally that I do not like, it is the UK government's Home Office, essentially the Department of Justice, except it's not the Department of Justice, of the UK government, who oversee the domestic intelligence agency. And the fact that there's a domestic intelligence agency still kind of blows my mind, called MI5, that we took a case against because it had been found that they had breached the law when it came to handling vast amounts of personal data. And listeners of this podcast may recall that we had a whole edition on this case just a few months ago where we discussed the case in detail. But just to quickly put it, MI5 was found to have handled data unlawfully, which was nobody argued against. No, everybody knew that MI5 had mishandled data and had done it unlawfully. And to say something is unlawful in a legal system that tries to take itself seriously, it's unforgivable that you write the laws and you still can't follow the laws. It's just, that's not acceptable. But not only did MI5 not live up to what it was supposed to do and essentially behaved unlawfully, it failed to tell this to its own oversight body. So it failed to follow the rules to actually report the fact that it had been doing no good. And yet, even when it was known, and this is by the most senior levels of the UK government, repeated ministers, like different ministers over time, just overlooked all the breaches. And in that period of time, also gave more powers to MI5. So it's just gross failure across the state of Britain, where the government likes to say that it's like one of the best democracies on the planet, and it's just a wholesale fail. And of course, on top of that, you know, this tribunal that made all these rulings, they don't necessarily like us that much, but they said on top of everything else, the lack of candor from MI5 was shocking. And that's British legalese for saying, you guys aren't cool for not being upfront when you say you're going to be truthful.
What was so good about the court case, other than the substance, which obviously was great, but some of the things the tribunal said are in British snooty kind of legal language, yeah, completely exactly. Damning. Like,
Yes.
At one point, they said that it was irrational of the Secretary of State to fail to make inquiries. That, like, I know it doesn't sound like much, but that is a dagger to the heart. Like, yes. And you've really got to hear it in that really fancy lawyer, irrational kind of way. And then they said that the failure of the management of MI5 not to disclose compliance failings was a serious misjudgment, which, a serious misjudgment. I mean, again, you really have to read it like in the tone or hear it in the tone.
Yeah.
But man, that is cutting.
It is cutting. But of course, the government's response was, okay. And then they moved on. Mm. Except this is where these cases that we take against the government in this country, they start to bite them eventually. And this is the third story of good news in this category is just last week from this recording date, the UK Supreme Court ruled against the UK government's plans to essentially send asylum seekers to Rwanda. And this is a long-standing battle. You would think, okay, what does this have to do with privacy and technology? What's interesting about this case is that the court avoided talking about human rights, avoided talking about European conventions and whatnot, and instead just focused on the fact that the government can't wish for Rwanda to be a good country. That is, the Supreme Court found that if you send an asylum seeker to Rwanda, it's entirely possible that the Rwandan government will send that asylum seeker back to the country that they're fleeing. And in international law, that is a big no-no. Like, that is just, it's unacceptable that in today's world that that would happen. And the British government kept on saying, well, no, that's, you know, Rwanda is nice. And the Supreme Court said, you can't just say Rwanda is nice, and so ruled against the government. And so the government has already responded saying, we're going to pass legislation very soon that will say in law that Rwanda is nice. And they will also put in that piece of legislation that Rwanda is nice, and no, nobody can ask the Supreme Court of the United Kingdom whether that is true or not. So they're basically trying to oust the legal system out of this entire debate by, first of all, saying that something that is not true is true. Mm. Again, how Orwellian can you get? And saying, because we said so, nobody can question us. The reason this matters to us at PI is because the government's going to lose on that in the courts, whether they like it or not, because we took a Supreme Court case about 5 years ago where the Supreme Court ruled that the government can't do that. It's, let alone the fact that the government wants to say something that is untrue and put into law as being true. Nothing's going to stop the UK government from being dumb, but it can't stop the other arms of government from questioning. It can't say that the court shall not intervene, because we took a case against the government where they tried to do that, and we whipped them bad on that. And that was beautiful. Was so that, it's nice to leave a mark.
Was that the case where the IPT, which is the Investigatory Powers Tribunal, which is the organ that reviews investigatory powers according to the Investigatory Powers Act, which is all super specific UK terrorism legislation, is it the one where the Supreme Court said, actually, no, we're still the main backstop? Yes, we can review the IPT's decisions.
Yeah, so it's exactly right. So the case was, we found that UK surveillance law could allow wide-scale hacking to the point where the police could seek a warrant that says, we want to hack every mobile phone in East London. Because there's no, the warrantry language was so vague in the law that it would allow for that kind of breadth of warrantry, which just doesn't make sense. It's a general warrant that, you know, technically fancy American lawyers had a revolution around a few hundred years ago. And when we took this case to the tribunal, the government said, hey, you can't listen to this case because the law doesn't allow for this case to be heard by a tribunal. And then we took it to the High Court and said, High Court, what the heck? And the government said, look, we shouldn't even be here in this High Court. Nobody's allowed to talk about this case at the High Court. So then we went to the Supreme Court and said, Supreme Court, that what? Come on, these people can't be, no. And the Supreme Court said, you know what? We agree with Privacy International. You can't write law in this way. It's just, it defeats the point of the balance of power. And the separation of powers.
And we have a podcast on the general warrants case as well, actually, all of which I'll try and link in the description so you can go listen to if you want.
Excellent. And so then while we're talking about like institutions holding governments to account, we can't forget that there are institutions you've never heard of that aren't Supreme Courts. There are international institutions like at the United Nations. There's a very powerful and influential Human Rights Committee that I remember for years we kept on begging them to pay attention while they do their periodic reports on like how is government X behaving on human rights. We couldn't get them to pay attention to issues around surveillance or technology for that matter. But now it's a matter of course that they're paying attention to these things. And actually, why am I talking about this? This is actually work that Caitlin did.
Well, okay, so.
Did you hear how I put that? This is actually work.
Brutal.
That Caitlin did. I made it sound
very
like you don't do anything.
But no, so the UN Human Rights Committee is the monitoring body of, I'm going to get this wrong, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which is, I think, the treaty. And so they do these country by country reviews. They go through and they say, here are the ways in which you're failing, here are the ways in which you're doing well, blah, 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 blah. And when we have specific concerns, try and pull them out and talk about them. And recently, one of the countries they actually looked at was Brazil. And obviously, as we've already mentioned, we've got a lot going on in Brazil, particularly around education technologies, the use of education technologies in Brazilian schools, and specifically the use of facial recognition technologies in Brazilian schools. And so we got together with two of our partners, which were Data Privacy Brazil and Internet Lab. We said we have serious concerns with these things. And then we went to Geneva and we said, we have serious concerns. We have serious concerns with these things. So what happens is the Human Rights Committee, they sit down and they have a think about what you said. And on Brazil, they included in their report on Brazil that the committee noted with concern reports about the harvesting and sharing of sensitive data, including biometric data, in particular from children, their families and teachers, through educational technologies in the context of educational activities without human rights impact assessments or safeguards, which is a problem for Article 17 of the ICCPR, and that the state party should bring its legislation on data protection, facial recognition, surveillance activity, and on any interference with privacy in full conformity with the covenant, in particular Article 17, and with the principles of legality, proportionality, necessity, and transparency, ensure its application, and provide victims with an access to effective remedies, which is all very legalistic and doesn't sound like much, but it's basically the Human Rights Committee going to the Brazilian government and saying, the way that you're currently doing this violates the international treaties you've signed, and you need to bring forward legislation to change that, which is kind of huge and really cool.
Yeah,
and even better, it's not even, I think, the win that you wanted to, you were actually talking about.
No, but it is. I was very much hoping you'd focus on that one, because I know that of the many, many things you do at PI, this is something that you actually were deeply involved with. But it's exactly the right example, because in a lot of countries across the world, in most countries across the world, when a UN body says that you're not living up to international legal standards, that actually has consequence. That has direct legal consequence in a large number of countries, particularly in Latin America. And so there was another example where our partners in Colombia and us, we worked to make sure that the Human Rights Committee paid attention to the fact that the government of Colombia was doing widespread surveillance of protests and conducting surveillance against human rights defenders and journalists. And it's one thing for, you know, Caitlin to go to Geneva and complain about something, or for a PI to be noted as complaining about something. That's what NGOs do for a living. We complain about these things. But when these august institutions write in their reports to the government of Colombia or the government of Brazil saying, this is not right, and you got to do something about this, unless you're the United Kingdom Parliament, you have to do something.
Yeah, because you've signed up to the treaties.
It's damning.
Like, you've taken on a legal obligation. You signed this treaty that said you'll behave in a particular way, and that's a law that you've signed up to. Article 17, I think, is the article on privacy. It's obviously where we live and eat most of the time.
Yeah,
but it's incredibly cool to see that that's being applied kind of outside of what is traditionally a fairly narrow scope, you know, around privacy, into things like education, into things like, you know, corporate use of data, into things like that are where we increasingly see the need for privacy and the need for safeguards. So yeah, so it's really exciting.
And again,
yeah.
10 years ago, the UN would not even mention the word privacy. The UN bodies would hardly pay attention to technology issues. And here, it's just part of what they do now, which is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Cool. So let's move on to our next category, which is legal protections. And unfortunately, there's the least amount of good news here because whenever there's news, it's always kind of mixed. So the whole idea of legal protections is when finally a government acts because they decide to take human rights and rights of people seriously, and they're going to introduce law. And in that law, there will be legal protections against abuses and what we essentially call safeguards. It's unfortunately rare that these things happen. Often it has to be on the back of a revolution, like when you get constitutional safeguards introduced, or when something horrible has happened, or when international bodies tell them something is not right. And so we have two examples of where legal protections are at least emerging. And I was surprised when our esteemed colleague, Caroline Wilson-Palo, who you had on this podcast a few months ago, talking about the anniversary of the Snowden revelations, she recommended this story about how the US is moving towards having legislation on government surveillance or regulating government surveillance. Now, the reason I'm surprised is because she's a American, highly educated lawyer who has led our litigation for years, but who's also highly realistic about the likelihood of Congress achieving anything. And after 9/11, the Bush administration started using foreign surveillance law expansively to conduct surveillance, whether it's abroad and also domestically, using the ability to conduct foreign surveillance, but with the ability to spy on Americans. When this became discovered around 2006, 2007, it became quite embarrassing, and the government had to continually renew its power to do this. So it had to continually go to Congress to seek Congress's authority to continue this expansive surveillance. And now the story is that because this renewal is currently up for debate, there's a lot of unhappiness on all sides of the political spectrum, and like all sides. As you know, American politics is a little crazy, but everybody on the extremes is concerned about this. And so it's actually possible that before the end of the year, because there's draft legislation, there's always draft legislation, but this is serious draft legislation, serious bills that might very well put some constraints on the use of this power by the US, well, particularly by the FBI. And as I said, like on the right, people are outraged that the FBI used these powers against Trump when he was a candidate. And on the left, well, the left has usually been quite good at trying to curtail surveillance, expensive surveillance powers, particularly because this power is discovered being used by Bush. When it was being used by Obama, there wasn't so much concern. But the people behind this legislation have throughout this entire period been very strong on these issues. And the fact that we might see some penetration is very good. And then the second story is a little, I'm a little hesitant to talk about this one, which is India finally has a data protection law. And when I say that, I say that from experience of when we started to try to find partners around the world who wanted to work with us on privacy issues, we actually had to travel extensively in India to find partner organizations who wanted to work with us, because everybody we spoke to told us, and this is like 2009, 2010, they told us, ugh, privacy doesn't matter. Nobody cares about privacy in all of India. You're never going to find anybody who wants to work with you. And 2 years later, we found organizations that wanted to work with us. 5 years later, there's actually a Supreme Court case in India finding that privacy is actually a constitutional right. And in that case, it required the government to establish a data protection law. And 5 years after that, there's actually now a data protection law in India giving data protection rights to over a billion people, which is extraordinary.
Yeah, that's crazy numbers. Yeah, except.
Except. The law isn't that great. Whenever a data protection law gets passed willingly by a government, it's always a mixed bag. There's going to be exemptions for various things that governments like to do. There'll always be the lack of a real regulator who has the ability to act against government and companies. Yeah, and the lack of exemptions for journalists, but always the exemptions for national security. So it's not the best piece of legislation, but, you know, and our partners will probably be very angry at us for even trying to say this is good news. But it's just nice to see the ball being moved forward. And there's a number of countries, like Pakistan's another country that has been flirting with data protection law. And every time there's a new draft, the next draft is worse. Mm. So in many ways, we're trying to gild a lily that if this law hadn't been passed, the next draft of this law would have been worse too. So this is at least a foundation.
Yes. And speaking of data protection bills, one has popped up in Nigeria. So hopefully soon Nigeria will have a data protection act. And to be entirely honest, I don't know that much about it, but I do know that our partners, Paradigm Initiative, have been doing a lot of work on it. So I'm hoping to speak to them soon and kind of catch up and see what's what. But yeah, it's nice to see more and more popping up all over the world.
Our final category, and this is actually the most challenging for us to populate, is around innovations. That is, what were some of the good news and innovations and new technologies over the last year? And there's one very clear case for me, which was, apart from seeing Elon Musk struggle so much at running Twitter, it was nice to see competition emerge around social media, where all of a sudden you had alternatives. And whether that is, I'm not a Threads user, but what was interesting about when Meta introduced Threads, they flirted with the idea that Threads will interface well with the Fediverse, with federated social media. And Blue Sky also said this, and I believe Blue Sky is designed around federation. And we're big fans of Mastodon, which already is a federated social media. I'm not sure you can even call it a platform at that point. And so the idea that social media might actually be federated in the future, it does feel a little exciting again. Finally, social media is interesting.
And actually, we're on Mastodon properly. We have a proper Mastodon account. You can follow us. Please do. Come say hi. We're kind of on Blue Sky. And we've flirted with Threads, mostly because there are so many different kind of options. We're trying to decide where to put resource. But if you are a Blue Sky user or a Threads user or whatever, and you think that that's where we should be, you know, let us know, because we're around, you know, we're just trying to work out what to do. But no, I agree. I think decentralization and meaningful decentralization is really interesting. You know, on Blue Sky, you can pick your own algorithm.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you can pick, they give you a whole range of different algorithms, different kind of feeds that you can follow and see, and you can decide how your content gets sorted, which I think is a really interesting alternative to, you know, the way that the main social media sites do it, which is they have their algorithm, it's designed to keep you on the platform for as long as possible, engaging with stuff, and you don't get to know what's in it. Versus what some people have, you know, suggested, which is getting rid of all algorithms, because they think that the way that those decisions get made and decided aren't transparent, and they're too open for abuse, and they're really concerning. You know, it's an interesting model. I don't, you know, it's just interesting.
it's nice to have interesting models again.
Yeah.
It was getting so boring out there. And this wasn't the world that we were building in the 1990s and early 2000s. You know, this is what we got. We did not get excited about internet rights and the internet economy to say, may there only be five companies of consequence, you know? So yeah, this is exciting. And talking about may there only be five companies of consequence, the next story is a good one too, where right of repair has become a meaningful thing, mostly because of what's going on in California with the Californian Right to Repair Act, which is forcing companies particularly American companies who operate in California, to ensure that their devices can be repaired, including by the device owners, us. And it went so far this year that in October, Apple, at a White House event, stated that it intends to make all the parts and tools and information necessary for consumers and repair shops to fix products. And they said it at the White House. And they said, and this is an important thing generally, they said they will make sure that their adherence to the Californian law will apply all across America. Usually companies are very, very reluctant to extend a jurisdiction of the rules that they have to follow. But this is them actually saying right of repair might very well happen for Americans. But there's pressure in Europe, which is nice. And this links up with, there's two pieces of legislation in Europe that move in similar circles that will, for environmental reasons, but also for autonomy and control over our devices. And for security reasons, they allow individuals to repair their devices. But importantly for us also may very well require companies to provide security patches for an extended period of time. So you don't have to keep on throwing out your device when it's too old to get a security update, but rather these companies will have to issue security updates. And we're so close. We're so close in Europe to getting this, but there's a lot of pushback, remarkably, from EU institutions. But yeah, it's nice to hear these bits of news.
It is. It is really nice.
Unfortunately, that's all the innovation stories that we have that are good, because the year was taken up by AI. And that's the only innovation people really wanted to talk about. And all the other technologies we track at PI are essentially the technologies that will allow governments to track you down and hurt you. And we did a lot of research around those types of stuff, but there's just no good news out there. It got so bad when I hunted for nominations of good news. One member of staff found a beautiful story of good news about how somebody had managed to complete the Super Mario 64 speedrun in record time because this gamer was aided by a cosmic ray that interrupted the servers and created a glitch that allowed for this game to be finished in record time. But unfortunately, when I did the research on this story, it actually happened in 2020. So it's not even good news from this year.
Oh, no.
That's how hard we dug. You know, we really dug low in the barrel to find good innovation news.
Oh, dear. That's really funny. Yeah.
But look, just to sum all of this stuff up, it's like, I imagine environmentalists have this problem too, you know, like we've all traded on talking about the world going to hell, and now people believe the world's going to hell. And so be it, you know, and it's important that we remember these stories. And it's also important for you to know that while this podcast is hosted by Privacy International, we didn't run you through all the successes we had this year. And most of the stories we talk about, we had nothing to do with. Mm. And it's nice to be able to say, look at these things happening in the world that we, who are paid full time to do these things, had nothing to do. And this is how the world has changed. Again, 10 to 15 years ago, traveling around the world, trying to find people to work with, trying to find institutions that we can put pressure on to hold these governments and companies to account was impossible. Next week, Caitlin's going to be trying to survive a heat wave in Brazil while engaging with countless partner organizations, while planning campaigns that may very well be successful because there are people and institutions to campaign to hold people and institutions to account. These things did not exist before, or they required extraordinary powers. And now, as I said, TikTok got fined 345 million euros, and I didn't even know about it, and we had nothing to do with it, and it's just beautiful. This is the beautiful thing of 2023. And I actually think that's going to be the beautiful thing of 2024 as well. Now that there's so much interest in AI, now there's so much interest in all these other issues, we're going to have so many battles in so many places. It's going to be a rich year for occasional good news.
Yeah. And no matter, like, the real benefit of small wins is that they're wins and they're achievable, which means when we ask you to sign things, please sign them.
Yes.
We're asking for a reason, I promise.
Yeah, yeah. And remember, the people and the institutions and the companies that lost in these cases, they have billions, if not trillions of dollars on their side. In many cases, they get to write the rules themselves and ignore the rules themselves. And yet, whether it's through the signing of things or the showing up at events or the filing of letters or the filings of documents, it is possible to hold these people to account. And in a world where we're currently returning to worshiping heroes and gods and politicians, it's nice to remember that it's possible to use institutions to hold the most powerful to account. So thank you to everybody who's listened, who this year signed a letter, signed up to something, endorsed an organization,
donated
to these organizations, any organization in any field. Just know they're getting good work done and there will be good news to come.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
Thanks for listening. You can sign up to be the first to learn more about our work at pvcy.org/podsignup. And we'll include some of the links to the relevant articles and the work of other organizations and some of our own work in the description wherever you're listening or on our website at pvcy.org/techpill. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you use. And we look forward to seeing you and we look forward to you listening to us in 2024. Doesn't quite make sense. We look forward to returning in 2024 with more editions of the Technology Pill. Music courtesy of Sepia. This podcast was produced by Max Burnell for Privacy International. And Caitlin froze. I think I lost her. Hopefully she'll come back. Yeah, she's totally gone. I think she lost her internet connection. But she's got the recording capability. Can I stop the recording?
Recording. Stop recording. Stop recording. Saving the recording. Oops.